It's November 1st already. Brighttown Broadcast News here. Thank you for joining me, Mike Adams. And today, I've completed an interview with Dr. Sheba, who's running for president as an independent. And this interview may very well break the internet. And it's coming up. I spent almost 2 hours with him. And this interview is, it's going to enlighten a bunch of people, and it's going to send other people into a rage. And you'll find out who's going to do what, because I'm playing part one here today. And Dr. Sheba is, of course, he's an independent. He's an inventor, very smart man, and a self-made man. He's not like Vivek Ramaswamy, who had all these big pharma deals and suddenly all this big pharma money showed up, you know. And he's not like, I'll let you hear him tell you in his own words about his upbringing and what he endured in India with the caste system. His mother being spat upon by the upper echelon of the people there that kind of represent the... you know, the supremacy that we're seeing in our world right now, including the Zionism supremacy, where these Zionists claim that they alone have the God-given right to go murder and slaughter anybody they want because they are superior. They are the chosen ones. In fact, I asked Dr. Sheba about that very point, and his answer on that is part of what's going to break the internet. Now, let's start with what you absolutely need to know. There was an Israeli bombing of a refugee camp called Jabalia. This refugee camp was, you know, it's for displaced Palestinians who are trying to flee northern Gaza. And they gathered in this camp, which is in Gaza. And the IDF bombed it, and they admitted bombing it. So this isn't like the Al-Ahli hospital situation where some people claim Israel bombed them, and then other people claim, no, it was the jihadis that launched a bomb, a rocket that went astray and hit the hospital parking lot. And so there's always been this disagreement since that happened. Not in this case. The Jabalia refugee camp was confirmed to have been bombed by Israel. At least 50 people are dead, including 19 relatives of a staff member of the publication Al Jazeera, by the way. 150 plus are wounded, and that's only so far. This bombing was carried out by Israel deliberately. They targeted the refugee camp because they wanted to kill one Hamas person that they say was there. So to kill one person, they also killed 50 and wounded 150 Palestinian civilians, including women and children. They did this, and they admit doing it. So to anybody out there who's been wondering, you know, what did Israel really bomb that hospital the other day? Did they really bomb the Greek Orthodox hospital? Did they really bomb the Turkish hospital? The answer is yes and yes and yes. Israel is deliberately bombing hospitals and refugee camps and churches and mosques and everything you can imagine, residential buildings, you name it. They are not even denying it any longer. They say they're bombing it. I'll read you the quotes here. They say they're bombing it because, well, they say the civilian casualties are, you know, part of the cost of war. And they say, well, we told those people, we told them to evacuate. They didn't evacuate. We dropped the bombs. They died, you know. And usually that's followed up with, we're Israelis. We're the chosen ones. We have the divine right to kill Palestinians because they say Palestinians are subhumans. And we, the Israelis, we are the chosen ones. And that's this racist supremacy Zionism that my guest today, Dr. Sheba, is really strongly criticizing, as you'll hear in the upcoming interview. And more people around the world are becoming aware that, wow, this is the philosophy of Zionism. It's a philosophy of racial supremacy, of ethnic cleansing, of slaughtering innocent civilians, women and children. And that philosophy is not compatible with human civilization. It is not compatible. And I have heard, I was in touch with Scott Ritter today. We're going to be doing an interview with him shortly. But I also heard Colonel Douglas McGregor say, that both Scott Ritter and Colonel McGregor have said, that they are very concerned that Israel will not survive this, because the philosophy of Zionism that currently drives Israel's policies and military campaigns is incompatible with human civilization. Well, those are my words, human civilization, but it's incompatible with longevity in the Middle East region. How can you exist with other neighbors, you know, the Jordanians, the Lebanon citizens, the, you know, even Hezbollah, the Egyptians, and so on, Syrians, Turks? How can you coexist with these people if you think that you alone are the race chosen by God to murder and kill everybody else and take their land? I mean, that is exactly what Zionism believes in. They admit it, they act on it, they confirm it, they don't even deny it. They do not deny it. They just say, oh, well, we told them, get out, and then we bombed them, and they died. I mean, that's all right. We're the chosen ones. They admit it. So now we have the official death count of Palestinians killed by Israel so far is 8,525. And because roughly about 40% of those are children, what this means is that more children have now been killed by Israel in Gaza than the total number of Americans killed in 9/11. Think about that. Because it's more than 3,000 children that have been killed. Think about how astonishing, how horrifying that is. And the Israelis just continue their bombings, and they do not apologize. If they have to bomb and kill 500 civilians to get one Hamas person, even if their intel is bad, even if it's a maybe, oh, there might be Hamas there, let's just bomb it and find out. Let's just kill 500 civilians. They will do it. There are no limits of how many civilians Israel will kill, because their philosophy is rooted in Zionism, which is a racist, supremacist philosophy that actually smacks of, you know, Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich and the original Holocaust. It really does. I mean, this is mirroring that Holocaust with a new attempt at a Holocaust carried out by the victims of the first Holocaust. So here's some of the latest horrifying news from Al Jazeera. Humanitarian groups have denounced Israel's attack on the Jabalia refugee camp. I'm also going to read from Zero Hedge here in a second, so we get more of a Western perspective. They say this deadly air raid should be a wake-up call to world leaders to secure a ceasefire in Gaza. The director of the nearby Indonesian hospital says at least 50 people were killed, many others wounded. The Al-Shifa and Indonesian hospitals are now hours away from running out of fuel to power their generators, so there'll be no electricity in the hospitals. Many more will die. The nation of Bolivia has cut ties with Israel. This was in response to the war crimes and human rights violations that are being carried out by the Israeli military in the Gaza Strip. Here's part of a statement from Maria Nela Prada. She's the minister to the Bolivian president. She says, quote, "We demand an end to the attacks on the Gaza Strip, which have so far claimed thousands of civilian lives and caused the forced displacement of Palestinians." So let's see. Colombia is recalling its ambassador to Israel, and Chile is also doing the same. In Australia, Jewish activists have occupied the Australian Defense Minister's office. That's Minister Richard Marles. Let's see, in Geelong, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, calling for Australia to end its military support for Israel. And this group is led by Jewish activists. So again, it's another example of especially younger Jews who are denouncing Zionism. And this distinction is really important for all of us to understand. Zionism is a philosophy rooted in racism, racial supremacy, violence and slaughter of others, stealing their land, and with, of course, biblical references that God has chosen us to be the ones. That's Zionism. It's a very dangerous, it's an anti-human, even a demonic philosophy that is rooted in violence, murder, destruction. That is not at all the same as Judaism. So people who are Jews, many of them, probably most of them, reject Zionism, especially younger Jews. And younger Jews typically just want to get along in the world, like most of us do. You know, we just want to live and let live, do our own thing, you know, be left alone by the government and not kill each other. But Zionism is all about, oh, we're eventually going to just kill all of you and take your land because God told us to do so. So, and then there's Christian Zionism, which is the Christian wing in the United States that supports Zionism because they think it fulfills biblical prophecy, and thus they support genocide and the mass killing of Palestinian civilians because they think that's going to bring Christ back. The second coming is going to happen if they kill enough Palestinians and then, you know, rebuild the temple in Jerusalem, then Christ comes back. Like that, that's what's driving those individuals right now. It's a very twisted reason to support bombing women and children, if you ask me. There's a group called Medical Aid for Palestinians, MAP, nonprofit group, said the attack on the Jabalia refugee camp marks a new low and should serve as a wake-up call to world leaders everywhere. Their meek requests for compliance with international law are being ignored entirely. Israel has instead increased the ferocity of its indiscriminate and disproportionate attacks. She called on a ceasefire in Gaza that will bring this bloodshed to an end. Oh, in the meantime, by the way, Yemen has declared war on Israel. So there you go. Now let's go over to the coverage on Zero Hedge to get more of a Western or U.S. perspective on this. From Zero Hedge, more confirmation of the Israeli airstrikes on a densely populated refugee camp in Jabalia neighborhood, which is north of Gaza City. Israel's military has owned up to it, saying an important senior Hamas commander who helped plan the October 7th terror attack was eliminated. See? Oh, we got one guy. Oh, what about these 200 other people that are killed and wounded? Oh, well, we told them to get out of there. How come they didn't? It's unreal. When an IDF spokesperson was pressed by CNN's Wolf Blitzer over why Israel chose to attack, even while knowing hundreds of civilians were there, listen to this, he essentially explained that eliminating the Hamas commander was more important than safeguarding civilian lives. The New York Times wrote about this. Unbelievable. The Israeli military said his elimination was carried out as part of a wide-scale strike on terrorists and terror infrastructure belonging to the Central Jabalia Battalion, which had taken control over civilian buildings in Gaza City. So CNN's Wolf Blitzer says, quote, "You knew that there were innocent civilians in that refugee camp, right?" And an IDF spokesperson says, "This is the tragedy of war. We told them to move south." Wolf Blitzer says, "So you decided to drop the bomb anyway?" IDF says, "We're doing everything we can to minimize civilian deaths." Other than not dropping bombs on them, of course. I mean, we're doing everything we can. Bombs away. We told them to leave. Bombs away. We dropped leaflets. Bombs away. We urged them. We turned off the electricity. Bombs away. We cut off their communications. Bombs away. What else could we have done? These people are insane. You know, at this point, anybody standing with Israel is just standing with pure evil. It just has to be stated. What Israel is doing here is pure evil. This has crossed the threshold of, you know, self-defense. Give me a break. Oh, Israel has a right to defend itself. Well, Israel does not have the right to violate international humanitarian law and commit war crimes, ethnic cleansing, and genocide against the Palestinian people. Israel does not have the right to bomb civilians in a giant open-air prison that Israel controls anyway. Just as, you know, if your state runs a prison, you don't have the right to just drop bombs on your prisoners inside the prison. And by the way, this so-called open-air prison of Gaza, these people haven't even been convicted of any crime. So they're not prisoners. They're civilians. They're innocent civilians with a few Hamas mixed in with them. But that's not an excuse to go bomb 200 civilians. But Israel thinks it is. They think that's okay. Again, that's Zionism for you. Right now, more tanks are pouring into Gaza. The full-scale assault is on. This is it. It's underway. The commander's battle orders for Gaza operation. We will fight in the alleys. We will fight in the tunnels. What is he trying to channel Winston Churchill here? We will fight where necessary and defeat the abominable enemy we are facing, the residents of Baris, Sderot, near Oz, and Kfar Gaza. The whole nation of Israel is with you, he says. Wow. By the way, the leader of Hezbollah is going to give a big speech on Friday. Apparently, it's supposed to be a big deal. And Hezbollah has spent the last few weeks destroying Israeli surveillance and communications equipment in northern Israel. That's the kind of equipment that normally is kind of an alert, like a perimeter alert for Israel. If Hezbollah is attacking from the north, all that equipment is being meticulously taken down. The night vision cameras, the comms towers, the telescopes, everything. Why? It's pretty obvious. Hezbollah is about to get involved in this war. And it looks like Turkey as well. So we may see a coordinated attack on northern Israel involving Hezbollah and even Turkish forces, not to mention Syrian forces, and also Iranian missiles. And you got to wonder. See, Iran has all of these guided missiles, you know, precision munitions. They've got lots of them of different sizes. They can easily fly the distance and they can hit specific targets in Israel. And should Iran launch that, which by the way is exactly what Lindsey Graham wants to see happen. It's what the US wants because they want to have a reason to start bombing Iran. But if Iran begins bombing Israel, or even if Hezbollah starts launching rockets and bombing Israel, and you start to see Israeli civilians buried under the rubble and dying, you know, Israeli women and children dying as their homes are bombed, you could bet the Western media is going to go insane about what a war crime that is. Oh, Israeli women and children are dying. Israeli women are buried under the rubble. Oh, this is violation of humanitarian law. This is the worst thing ever. The same media outlets that say nothing when it's Palestinian women and children. So just take note of that in advance, because that is exactly what is coming if there's not a de-escalation effort. I want to read something for you posted by Keith Woods on Twitter, or X as it's called now. And it mirrors a lot of what I've been thinking here. You know, before October 7th, I had no criticism of Israel. I wasn't tracking this issue. I wasn't looking at Palestine. I wasn't looking at Zionism. Wasn't studying the history of the place. And I certainly didn't have anything against Israel or the IDF or anything of that kind. But look at where many of us are now after observing the reality of what's happening and the extreme callousness of Israel in bombing these civilians and refusing to back down, refusing humanitarian aid, refusing to negotiate for peace. And it begs the question, like, how did Israel throw away all the goodwill that it had after October 7th when it was the victim, even though now we know it was a stand-down order? But Keith Woods writes the following. Support for Israel was at a peak after the Hamas attack. How could they possibly mess it up? Well, here's how. They proceeded to invent the most ridiculous atrocity propaganda ever, label everyone who questioned their obvious lies or breaches of international law an anti-Semite, call the people of Gaza animals and speak excitedly about genocide and collective punishment, launch a terror bombing campaign that targeted churches, fleeing refugees, and hospitals, cut off water, food, and electricity to 2.5 million people, bomb multiple neighboring countries, launch a series of attacks on Palestinians in the West Bank, and then wear gold stars at the UN as if they're the victims of all this. All of this predictably turned public opinion in the West. But rather than asking if any of this might be their own fault, Zionists respond by attacking us for our, quote, latent Jew hatred. That's how Ben Shapiro describes it. And using this as proof that everyone was secretly anti-Semitic all along. So in other words, the Zionists take no responsibility for their actions and they have no self-reflection that they look like lunatics. Because they're acting like genocidal lunatics. Like, God told me to kill all the babies. And the rest of us in the whole world are looking at this like, oh my goodness, what on earth happened to these people? Like, we never knew all along that they had this latent lunacy, this latent, you know, genocide. That's what's been latent all along. We don't have any latent Jew hatred. I don't hate Jews at all. Many of my friends are Jews. I've always got along with Jews. Never had any issue. And even today, I don't have any issue with anyone being a Jew. I'm with the Jews that are denouncing Zionism. My issue is with any philosophy that is a supremacy, a racist supremacy, violent, you know, genocidal philosophy. And that's what Zionism is. So if anybody in Israel is wondering, why are people like me criticizing you? Look in the mirror. Look at your own actions. Look at what you're doing. Of course you're going to be criticized. You deserve criticism. And the criticism is only going to get worse because you're acting like lunatics. As Keith Woods writes, quote, they will learn nothing from any of this. No self-reflection, no empathy for how this looks to outsiders not involved in the conflict. They just rage at us for being too stupid and selfish to see how just they are. They can't help themselves. Yeah, exactly. And also, Scott Ritter says much the same thing, that Israel has lost the support of many people in Western nations, including the United States, both Jews and non-Jews. And if Israel continues down this path, Israel is going to carve out a chapter of history for itself that will read right alongside Nazi Germany, Adolf Hitler, and the Holocaust. Because the parallels are obvious and horrifying. Again, if Israel continues down this path. Now, as I said yesterday, Israel has a way out of this, which would be to rise up, to depose Netanyahu, or maybe somebody within his own administration would do so. Some have tried already. Arrest him, charge him with war crimes, lay the blame at his feet, and maybe some of the IDF commanders as well. Issue a formal apology to the world, and then offer reparations to the Palestinian families and victims, if that's even possible. I don't know how many billions of dollars that would be. And then agree to stop treating the Palestinians like animals and end the prison camp and so on. I mean, Israel could get out of this and the country could restore its image. But there doesn't seem to be much willingness right now, at least not in Israel, for that to happen. Now, the Jews outside of Israel are with me on this, by and large. The Jews in America, the Jews in Canada, the Jews in Australia, the Jews in the UK, they agree with me on this. They don't want this genocide carried out in their name because they know that the backlash against all people who are Jewish for decades to come could be quite substantial if the world sees the Jewish state, Israel, carrying out genocide unapologetically and even celebrating it, mocking it. And you've probably seen some of the videos. They mock the deaths of the Palestinians. There's a level of cruelty and evil here that is visceral. This is what is freaking people out all over the world. And wait till you hear my interview with Dr. Shiva, what he has to say about this, because it only adds to that. Now, did you know that Israeli doctors have for years used Palestinians for organ harvesting operations? It's true. And this story is actually covered in The Guardian. And here's the headline. Now, this story is from 2009. So this has been going on for a long time. Here it is. Quote, doctor admits Israeli pathologists harvested organs without consent. Israel has admitted, by the way, this is one of the reasons why Israel needs the prison camp of Gaza. They need a steady flow of organs. Like, where have you seen this before? Right? Communist nations. Israel has admitted that pathologists harvested organs from dead Palestinians and others without the consent of their families, a practice it said ended in the 1990s. It emerged this weekend. The admission by the former head of the country's Forensic Institute followed a furious row prompted by a Swedish newspaper reporting that Israel was killing Palestinians in order to use their organs, a charge that Israel denied and called anti-Semitic. Now, first of all, this term, anti-Semitic, they're wearing this thing out so fast. That term has more mileage on it now in the last 3 weeks than ever in all of history. So anytime you say anything accurate about Israel, they slap the label on it, anti-Semitic. Oh, Israel bombed a refugee camp in Gaza. Oh, that's anti-Semitic. No, Israel bombed the refugee camp. That's a fact. Well, it's anti-Semitic because we don't like your tone. It's anti-Semitic because it's critical of Israel. See, the term anti-Semitic is going to be meaningless in about 2 weeks because you're using it on everything. In fact, all of us should just start using the term everywhere all the time. Anytime anybody disagrees with you, just say, that's anti-Semitic. And they'll be like, what? What do you mean that's anti-Semitic? Oh, it's anti-Semitic. Just anytime you disagree with somebody, anti-Semitic. Because that's the way Israel is using it now. You criticize them for something they did, oh, it's anti-Semitic. But knowing what you now know about how the Zionists treat the Palestinians as, you know, animals, if they harvest organs from animals, in their minds, it's no different than harvesting an organ from a pig or a monkey or a goat. So of course they harvest organs from Palestinians. And you know they have over 5,000 Palestinians held as prisoner right now in Israel. You think they're not harvesting some of the organs from those people to give organs to, you know, Israelis who need a transplant, need a liver, pay enough money? Guess what happens? Oh, another Palestinian prisoner gets killed and their liver gets harvested. It winds up in this Israeli. You think that doesn't happen? Come on. You know that happens. And it's been happening for years, for decades. So there's a lot more to this story. This, I'm reading from The Guardian. There was a television documentary that revealed all this. It's likely to generate anger in the Arab and Muslim world. Iran's state-run Press TV reported the story, illustrated with photographs of dead or badly injured Palestinians. Ahmed Tibi, T-I-B-I, an Israeli Arab MP, said the report incriminated the Israeli army. The story emerged in an interview with Dr. Yehuda Hiss, H-I-S-S, former head of the Abu Kabir Forensic Institute near Tel Aviv. The interview was conducted in 2000 by an American academic who released it because of the row between Israel and Sweden over a report in the Stockholm newspaper Aftonbladet, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Anyway, Channel 2 reported that in the 1990s, specialists at Abu Kabir, again, near Tel Aviv, harvested skin, corneas, heart valves, and bones from the bodies of Israeli soldiers, Israeli citizens, and then Palestinian and foreign workers, often without permission from relatives. So they're harvesting organs from the foreign workers too. Wow. So there you have it. And Israel admits to all of that. They just say, oh, we stopped doing it. Really? Yeah, nobody believes you because you bomb women and children knowingly. You carry out crimes against humanity. Of course you're harvesting organs. I mean, you talk about demonic, right? Tel Aviv is a demonic city. It's Sodom and Gomorrah. It's like full-blown, you know, transgenderism. It's organ harvesting, probably all kinds of satanic and demonic rituals there. And then Netanyahu tells us that Israel is the chosen one being led by God to the revelations, the arising of the anointed ones. No, no, no. Your cities are run by demons. And you, Netanyahu, you are a genocidal, lunatic, maniac, servant of Satan. But then again, servants of Satan often think that God is giving them orders, don't they? It's not God. It's Satan giving him orders. He thinks he's hearing God. He has no discernment of the voices in his head. I hope you haven't fallen for any of the hoaxes that are being pushed out there by the Israeli zealots. Did you fall for the one that said that Hamas baked a baby in an oven? It's complete fabrication. Never happened. It's already been debunked by Israeli journalists, by the way. There's no basis for it whatsoever. It's completely made up. And you know that German girl that was killed? She was the one at the party. the desert party, and she died, and her body was shown in the back of a pickup truck. Well, for the last few days, everybody's been running around the internet claiming that she was beheaded. She wasn't beheaded. Yeah, she was killed. She wasn't beheaded. People just made it up, and they spread it around. No, her head was always attached in all those photos, and even as her body has apparently been recovered, and it's been confirmed to be her, her head is still attached. It's completely made up. And the whole claim of 40 beheaded Jewish infants. Oh, you know, Hamas cuts off the heads of babies. You've heard it repeated again and again and again. Complete fabrication. It never happened. They've not provided any evidence that it ever did. It was actually a story that just got augmented. First it was, oh, we found, you know, dead babies, and then it was 40 dead babies, and then it was dead babies without heads, and then, oh, they cut off the heads of 40 babies. It's kind of like the old game of, you know, telephone. You line up 10 kids, and then they whisper into each other's ear, you know, and then the story changes with each kid until it, at the very end, it's something completely different from how it started. That's how you end up with Hamas cut the heads off 40 Jewish babies. Never happened. I mean, Hamas did horrible things, no question about it. And of course, I condemn all that. I have repeatedly, because I'm in favor of protecting civilians, no matter who they are. It's wrong to kill civilians, whether they're Israeli or Palestinian. So of course, I condemn Hamas's acts of murder and violence and terrorism. But why do you have to make stuff up on top of that? Why can't you just tell the truth about what Hamas did? Because that's horrifying enough. They killed innocent women, innocent civilians. Of course, hundreds of the civilians who were killed were actually killed by the IDF, it turns out. But Hamas killed its own share as well. And I condemn that, and that's evil. But why do you have to make stuff up? It's like, oh, they killed hundreds of civilians and they threw babies into ovens. Well, if anybody's doing horrible things to babies, it's Israel bombing residential buildings and burying babies under the rubble. That is happening, and that's not an exaggeration. How many babies have been buried alive? How many babies have had their faces smashed in by rubble because the building they were living in was bombed by the IDF without a care whatsoever for civilians? You know, the horrors that Israel is carrying out are very real, no exaggeration needed. They've killed over 8,500 Palestinians, not an exaggeration. 3,500 plus are children. It's horrifying enough as it is. See, the Palestinian side doesn't have to fabricate fake stories like Israel does. Israel's always inventing fake stories because they're using the emotional hooks of that to try to convince people to justify the genocide against Gaza. Say, oh my God, those people threw babies in ovens, kill them all, you know? I mean, that's the reaction that it's all designed to invoke, but it's completely fake. It's all engineered. It's manipulated. By the way, I don't know if you realize how racist Israel is. I didn't know this until recently, but there's a video that's been put out. I got to play a couple minutes for you that shows how racist Israel is. It's unbelievable. Like, did you know that if you're an Israeli Jew, you are not allowed to marry someone who isn't a Jew? Not allowed to. Because everybody else is considered, you know, an animal, subhuman. But check out this video. It's shocking. Here we go.
Israel is one of the most racist countries in the world. While you'll never hear anyone in the mainstream media say this, this is actually one of the most important things you need to understand if you want to know what's happening right now. From its inception, the whole idea of Israel as a country was based on racism. Israel was conceived as a Jewish state, and while there's nothing wrong in principle with Jews having a homeland, the problem is that they insisted that homeland had to be in Palestine, which already belonged to someone, the Palestinians. The slogan of Israel's founders was a land for a people without a land. But deep down, they all knew that the only way to have a Jewish majority in Palestine, an Arab country, was to expel the Arabs. One of the founders of Israel, Yosef Weitz, wrote, "There's no room in the country for both peoples. There's no way but to transfer the Arabs from here to neighboring countries." Israel was quite literally founded by expelling and massacring hundreds of thousands of Arabs in a years-long process called the Nakba. And when you found a country based on racial exclusion, you're gonna get a culture that fosters and celebrates racial exclusion. Because countries that commit terrible atrocities rarely acknowledge committing those atrocities. And the presence of Palestinians who remained in Palestine became a constant reminder, not only of the violence that founded Israel, but of the constantly looming threat that they might come back and try to reclaim their land. Every day you can find videos coming out of Israel showing Israelis calling for all Arabs to die. Insulting the Prophet Muhammad. Desecrating mosques, spitting on Christians, mocking and celebrating the murder of Palestinians, committing violent hate crimes against Palestinians, watching Gaza get carpet bombed from a cliffside for entertainment. But don't just go off these anecdotes. Let's look at some of the polls. One poll found that 2/3 of Israeli teens believe Arabs to be less intelligent, uncultured, and violent. It also found that 50% of Israelis wouldn't live in the same building as Arabs, wouldn't befriend Arabs, wouldn't let their children befriend Arabs, and wouldn't let Arabs into their homes. Another poll found that 60% of Israeli Jews want segregation from Arabs. Another poll found that half of Israeli Jews agree with the statement, "Most Jews are better than most non-Jews because they were born Jews." The poll also found that 88% of Israeli Jews would be disturbed if their son befriended an Arab girl, and 90% would be disturbed if their daughter befriended an Arab boy. This poll found that about half of Israeli high schoolers don't think Arabs should have the right to vote. Another poll showed that almost half of Israeli Jews don't want Arabs teaching their kids. Not only are these views widely held in Israeli society, they're also represented in government, which codifies these sentiments into law. For example, Israel has a law that says if an Israeli marries a Palestinian or someone from several other regional Arab states, that person isn't allowed to move in with said Israeli. This law was passed in 2003, but it's been renewed every single year since. Israel also doesn't allow interreligious marriage to be performed in the country, which is meant to deter Jews from marrying non-Jews. In 2018, Israel passed the nation-state law, a law which has constitutional status, which says the right to exercise national self-determination, i.e. have rights, is the exclusive right of Jews. No one else. There's also the Nakba law, which makes it illegal to acknowledge the Nakba, the expulsions of Palestinians that were needed to found Israel. This would be like passing a law to make it illegal to talk about indigenous genocide or slavery in America. There's also the Admissions Committee law, which basically allows towns to operate panels that deny applications for entry based on socio-cultural compatibility, which essentially just legalizes racist housing discrimination. In Israel, advocating genocide of Palestinians doesn't hurt your chances of holding a high position in government. And in fact, in many cases, it helps. In 2014, Israeli lawmaker Ayelet Shaked wrote an unhinged rant on Facebook, calling all Palestinians enemy combatants and saying their mothers should be killed for giving birth to, quote, little snakes. The next year, she was appointed Minister of Justice by Benjamin Netanyahu. Itamar Ben-Gavir, a lifelong admirer of Meir Kahan, an Arab exterminationist, a man who praised a Jewish settler who killed a Palestinian for throwing a rock at him, a man who was famously acquitted after being criminally charged for chanting death to Arabs, is Israel's current Minister of National Security. He's not some fringe figure either. He's one of the most popular politicians in Israel right now. In the last few days, Israel's been working hard to cast itself as the victim. The victim of hatred, the victim of terrorism, the victim of anti-Semitism, that they have no choice but to lay siege to Gaza. But underneath this carefully concocted victim complex is a racist, Jewish supremacist state that's been trying to finish the job that the Nakba started for decades. And really, this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. After all, they're literally cutting off water and electricity to a city of 2 million people right now. Their generals talk openly about flattening Gaza and killing the animals, meaning Palestinians. It's obvious their goal is genocide.
So there you go. Nicely done video there. A lot of shocking things that I did not know about Israel. I had no idea how racist Israel was as a nation. And this whole idea of Zionist supremacy, it just smacks of, you know, all the most horrible examples of supremacy in history, even like white supremacy in the history of the South of the USA, you know, the KKK, which was run by Democrats, as you probably know, or of course, you know, the anti-Jewish Holocaust with the Third Reich in Europe, and also anti-Semitism that really did happen across other parts of Europe even before that as well. But we have all hopefully been taught to denounce supremacy. We have all been raised, I mean, at least recalling how I was raised and taught, I went to public school, we were taught, you know, slavery is bad, white supremacy is bad, any form of racial supremacy is bad. What Hitler did to the Jews was bad. But little did we know all along that Zionism embraced that philosophy and is now exercising it to this day. And this has become the culture of Israel. And many Israelis don't even realize how racist they are. They don't realize how much they've been indoctrinated with all this hatred, this extremism and racism and intolerance that has turned them into genocidal people who literally condone the mass slaughter of other innocent human beings, including women and children. So again, wait till you hear my interview with Dr. Shiva, who helps explain quite a lot of this. Now, we are on the verge of World War III. In fact, here's an article out of RT that's quoting Fyodor Lukyanov, who is a Russian foreign policy expert, and he says World War III has already begun. He says the new global war comes as a series of intertwined conflicts rather than a single major one. He's Russia's leading foreign policy expert. He says a world order that has been unpleasant but manageable is being broken down, and there seems to be no mechanism for the resolution of conflicts, including the ongoing escalation between Israel and Hamas. In other words, you know, the United Nations is useless, right? I mean, they can condemn Israel, and they have. Doesn't matter. The UN is useless. And diplomacy has been abandoned by the West. So the U.S. and Israel engage in no diplomacy whatsoever. Their diplomacy is, we will bomb you. That's it. We will bomb you. We will kill you. We will sanction you. There is no diplomacy. There is no negotiation. It's our way or the highway. And that comes from this unipolar view of the world where the West was able to dominate nations and policies and currencies and transactions and so on for many years since, well, the end of World War II. But Lukyanov says the following. He says that the escalation in the Middle East is not the last conflict to come. More hostilities are expected to break out worldwide soon, and no one seems to be capable of stopping them. He says, quote, the international order is breaking down. It was an unpleasant one based on the fear of mutual destruction, but it was manageable. He's talking about, you know, the Cold War, U.S. versus the Soviet Union, for example. Mutually assured destruction. Everybody had nukes, so nobody dared use them because, you know, self-preservation. He continues, wars in the Middle East have erupted before, but the USSR and the USA intervened and extinguished them until the next conflict. And now, I don't see even a temporary settlement mechanism. So understand what he's saying. You know, the former Soviet Union and the USA, they used to engage in diplomacy. They used to be able to talk to each other. Even, you know, even during the Obama years, even to some extent during the Trump years, you know, but I'm talking even pre-1991, Ronald Reagan years. Ronald Reagan could talk to the Soviets. There were diplomacy channels that existed. Plus there were back channels, unofficial channels. You know, the red phone, where they could contact each other and they could de-escalate. And frankly, the Kennedy administration is quite well known for this, de-escalating with the Cuban Missile Crisis, probably preventing nuclear war from breaking out at that time. That was all done through back channels. Today, there are no back channels. Today, there's not even a philosophy of diplomacy. The U.S. State Department is run by, you know, racist lunatics like Victoria Nuland, an actual genocidal anti-Russian racist who wants to see every Russian person murdered, kind of like the way Israelis view Palestinians. You know, I mean, this is the common problem in our world. We have people in charge who are racist genocidal lunatics. And the only question is, who do they hate today? You know, one day they might hate you, you who are listening, whatever your group is, whatever your ethnicity is, whatever your skin color is, one day they may come for you because there's no more diplomacy. So Lukyanov says, he notes that the Palestinian group Hamas has picked the, quote, right moment to strike against Israel, given that the country has experienced permanent internal chaos for over a year already. Now, that internal chaos is all about Netanyahu and Netanyahu's quest for power to rig the court system there, to rig the judiciary so that he can never be taken out of power. And that's why we've had, you know, so many protests in Israel over the last year or so. And Netanyahu is fighting for his own political survival. It's one of the reasons why he wants to take Gaza, because he thinks that will make him the savior of Israel and it will protect him from being prosecuted for his crimes and corruption and fraud. And he's wrong. He's actually going to destroy Israel. And he will not only be prosecuted, he might be executed by Israel by the time this is all said and done. But history will also note that Netanyahu was a monster alongside people like Stalin or Hitler or Mao. It's going to be Netanyahu. He's a monster. He's not a savior. He's not getting messages from God. He's getting instructions from Satan. And that's what he's acting on. And anybody foolish enough to follow him is actually carrying out the will of demons, not God. And remember, you know, the whole lesson about the Antichrist, that someone will come to you pretending to be him, pretending to be the Lord, and will deceive you into carrying out acts against God's teachings. That's exactly what Israel is doing right now under Netanyahu. But anyway, the point here from Lukyanov is that there are no longer mechanisms of balance in the world that can de-escalate these situations. And as a result, there are no brakes. Let's put it that way. There are no brakes on this runaway train. This is the train of war. And the brakes are shot. And someone's got the pedal to the metal, accelerating this down the tracks at maximum speed. And where this is going to be absolutely devastating to the entire planet. And I still see people who absolutely are not ready for what's coming. Not ready for World War III, not in the least. I know there are people out there who, they just watch the news as a form of entertainment. Oh, isn't that interesting? Oh, look, somebody bombed somebody else today. Okay, well, what else is on Channel 7 or whatever, you know? Don't miss Joy Reid and Joy Behar on The View. We have to watch The View. They're not absorbing the information of what's happening in the world and what it means for all of us. Do you realize that the racist, supremacist philosophy of Zionism, which, by the way, virtually the entire GOP has signed up for, except Representative Thomas Massie, by the way, who has resisted that, and he has said no to more funding and weapons for Israel. But aside from Thomas Massie, virtually everybody in the GOP, including the new House Speaker, they're all obedient slaves to Israel. And do you realize that Zionism could take us all to World War III? And why the U.S., why these members of Congress and the Senate and virtually all the candidates running for president, plus Joe Biden and all these people, why they're beholden to Israel while letting America be invaded with a wide open border is beyond me. No reasonable person can understand this. Well, except, I mean, I guess it is explainable when you understand that most of these so-called representatives are traitors to America, but they're loyal to Israel. That's their master. If you want to know who's in charge, just note who you cannot criticize. You can't criticize Israel. That's your master. The GOP does nothing to fight for America. Have you noticed that? Well, of course you have. The GOP, spineless for America. But boy, they jump to the salute for Israel. We'll do anything for Israel. What, you need weapons? You need soldiers? You need aircraft carriers? What, tell us what you need. You need bombers? You need money? Yeah, anything for Israel. And they're like, could we build a wall to protect America? No. Or, hey, GOP, could you defend the First Amendment in America? Just the first one? Oh, no. The government has to have the right to censor people. Especially them pro-Palestinian people, says Governor DeSantis. Gotta censor those Palestinians. Can't let them speak. I thought you were pro-free speech. Well, except for people who defend ethnic groups that start with P. It starts with Palestinians, and it's also going to include the Pakistanis. And you know me, I would have to ask, well, what about the people of Papua New Guinea? Well, they don't have much to say anyway. So, you know, isn't it interesting? It only took one attack by Hamas to expose Governor DeSantis as a traitor to the Bill of Rights. Isn't that interesting? It's just, wow. Hamas actually exposed Governor DeSantis. I did not know they had that capability. That's rather astonishing. And it's not just DeSantis being exposed. Trump is too. I mean, Trump is all out. We'll do anything for Israel, whatever they want. It starts to make a lot of sense, you know, Operation Warp Speed, Pfizer's vaccine, you know, developed by an Israeli, and how they injected the Israeli soldiers and citizens first. And then I guess if Trump is president, then America will go to war in the Middle East because it's anything for Israel. But what about getting things done for America? Oh, well, you know. The White House lawyer says that's not possible. The legal counsel says that's not possible. You know, the Pentagon says it's not possible. I mean, Trump had 1,000 excuses during his 4 years why he couldn't get anything done. But if he's president again, you might as well just put a white and blue flag over the presidential seal and say, actually, we elected Trump to be president of Israel because that's who he's going to serve. Turkish President Erdogan has freshly accused Israel of crimes against humanity. Here's the quote. The Israeli administration, backed with unconditional support by Europe and America, has been committing crimes against humanity in front of the entire world for 25 days. This is a quote from Erdogan. He condemned the killing of women and children and the bombing of the hospitals, including the Friendship Hospital gifted to Gaza by Turkey. He argued that Israel must be stopped immediately. He's called for immediate ceasefire and suggested an international peace conference on Palestine-Israel to work out details of lasting peace for the region. Oh, by the way, I'm also learning from the story that the bombs that were dropped on Jabalia, the refugee camp, those were U.S.-made bombs. So the U.S. is providing weapons to Israel that are being used to carry out genocide, which is a violation of U.S. weapons export laws. If the U.S. enforced its own rules, it would have to halt all weapons exports to Israel and even recall weapons that it has sent to Israel because they are being used in total violation of international humanitarian law. So why does Israel get a free pass on this when the United States' own rules say that this is not allowed? You can't use U.S. weapons in this manner. And the answer, again, obedience to Israel. Israel is allowed to do whatever it wants, to violate any laws, to carry out any genocide, to kill anybody at once. And Anthony Blinken will sit there and nod. Oh, yes, it's all good. It's all good. Just keep bombing with U.S. weapons because we're with Israel. And, you know, Israel has a right to defend itself by bombing refugee camps? What threat to Israel was a refugee camp of mostly impoverished, you know, displaced, bombed out people who are barely alive, starving? They're a threat to Israel? You have to drop Turns out it was 6 one-ton U.S.-made bombs dropped on the Jabalia refugee camp. Unbelievable. And where is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on this, by the way? Maybe I've missed something, but he's been pretty silent on this issue as far as I can tell. I had heard he was going to make a statement of some kind. I haven't heard it yet. But I'm very concerned and maybe somewhat skeptical of what he's going to say. Because I think there are a lot of, as I said before, a lot of Jewish supporters of Children's Health Defense. And if those Jews are also Zionists, then they support genocide. And if RFK Jr. speaks out against genocide, he may lose the support of many Jews in America who are Jewish Zionists. I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I hope Bobby Kennedy makes the right choice and denounces this genocide. Because at this point, if you don't denounce Israel's actions, you're not qualified to be president. I mean, it's not enough to just, you know, try to balance both sides. At this point, you have to denounce Israel's actions as genocidal, illegal, inhumane. They are cruel. They are horrifying. Israel is acting as a terrorist state itself. The entire world should denounce Israel for what it's doing right now. And if you can't denounce Israel, you don't deserve to be president, and I won't support any candidate that doesn't denounce Israel's actions here. I can't in good conscience support any candidate that goes along with this. And like I said yesterday, I think that means I can't support Trump because Trump is going to be all in with Israel no matter what. Well, then he's disqualified from being president. Sad to say, because he did win the election in 2020. He actually technically is the current president. It was stolen from him. But if he were in charge right now, I guess he'd just be sending double the weapons to Israel, making the Middle East situation even worse. But I want you to hear this from Dr. Shiva, because Dr. Shiva, actually, he seems to be the most informed candidate for president on these issues. He understands what Zionism is. He understands it's a philosophy of supremacy and genocide. I mean, you'll hear him say that. We're going to play that interview here coming right up. In the meantime, I want to encourage you to take care of your health. I know these are stressful times. Wait until you see what happens next. It's going to be way more stressful, but get plenty of sleep. Don't forget about your exercise, your need for exercise, and check out Juvent, by the way, JUVENT.com, Juvent.com. They have the micro impact plates, and I just interviewed its president, Pete Simonson, earlier today. I'm going to play that, I think, coming up maybe Sunday or Monday, or maybe Friday. I'm not sure. I'm going to play that interview soon. I use that plate every morning, and I have since 2016. So coming up on 7 years of using that plate, and it's a game changer for bone health, for connective tissue, for circulation, for the endocrine system, and much more. So check that out at juvent.com and watch for that interview soon. And then also, we have a very rare special right now on a buffered vitamin C powder, non-GMO vitamin C, lab tested. It's sodium ascorbate. So it's buffered with sodium, which means it's not acidic. So it's more pH neutral. And it's in a powder, and it's available right now at healthrangerstore.com at 25% off just for the next day. And it's an unusual sale. We normally don't have sales on vitamin C because the non-GMO vitamin C is so expensive to source. It's very pricey stuff. And we're about to produce a whole new production lot, so we're trying to clear out this existing lot, and that's why we're putting it on sale. And so you benefit, save 25%, sodium ascorbate or buffered non-GMO vitamin C. We also have other forms of vitamin C, the regular ascorbic acid, of course, capsules and so on. But you can find all that at healthrangerstore.com. And just remember, by the way, on vitamin C, it's normal for vitamin C to turn slightly yellow over time. It doesn't take away from its effectiveness, and it doesn't mean it's bad. It's normal. I have vitamin C that I've had sitting around for, you know, a few months or even a year, and it will start to turn a little bit pale yellow, still perfectly fine to take it. No worries about that. You don't want to take it if it turns like brown, like dark brown. Yeah, then it's lost its antioxidant capabilities. But just a little bit yellow, it's no big deal. And that's true across all forms of vitamin C. But practice good nutrition, folks. Drink clean water and engage in physical fitness. You know, keep yourself in good shape. Very hard times are coming. I mean, we are literally on the verge of World War III. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen next week. It could happen in a month or even maybe by the end of the year. I'm convinced that the Biden administration wants a world war before the election in 2024 because, of course, they don't want the election to take place. They want a big crisis instead. And that's exactly what they are creating. And they want to bomb Iran, as you know. So with all that said, then let's bring in Dr. Shiva. You're going to hear part one of a two-part interview. I'll play part two tomorrow. And prepare yourself. Again, this interview is going to break the internet when you hear what he has to say. But he's a very thoughtful, very intellectual person, and he presents this information with a sense of passion and also a sense of authority that he knows what he's talking about. So give him a listen, even if you agree or disagree. Give him a listen, see what you think. And then if you want to check out more about him and his campaign running for president, go to Shiva. That's S-H-I-V-A, Shiva, and then the numeral 4president.com. So Shiva4president.com, and it's the number 4. All right, enjoy the interview. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Welcome. This is Mike Adams of Brighteon.com. You're about to hear a very controversial interview, but one rooted in free speech and principles for human freedom. The interview is with Dr. Shiva, who's running for president of the United States of America as an independent. And in the following interview, you're going to find out that it's uncensored, it's unedited, and that he does exercise the freedom to speak his mind and his heart about what he believes in. Not everybody is going to agree with what he says, but I decided it was important to invite him on to hear his thoughts, hear his words, and to share them with you with this, I don't know, little warning up front that we're rooted in freedom of speech, and that's why you're about to hear some things that a lot of other people won't say. They won't dare say these things because they would be censored. Well, you know, we're already targeted for censorship, and yet we are still here. So get ready to hear an interview that you probably will not hear anywhere else with Dr. Shiva right here on Brighteon.com. Welcome to today's interview here on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we are joined by our returning guest, Dr. Shiva, who's running for the United States presidency, and his website is Shiva4, which is the numeral 4president.com. So Shiva4president.com, and he is running as an independent. And last time we had him on, he was pretty outspoken, which we love that here on Brighteon.com. And I will tell you today, he's going to be outspoken again, and he's not censored. And we support free speech and also ideas based on freedom and liberty. So welcome, Dr. Shiva, to the show today.
How are you doing, Mike?
I am. I'm a little freaked out, actually, about what's going on in the world. And I'm being called an anti-Semite for saying that it's wrong to bomb women and children. So that's how I'm doing, Dr. Shiva. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Mike. And, you know, at our last meeting, Mike, you know, I bashed the hell out of Trump and Kennedy. And I know, don't take this the wrong way, but after that, you said Kennedy was a big hero, you know, an American hero. And I was going to call you up on that. But the reality is, Mike, whether it's you or every average American who really loves this country, what's happened is the issue of Zionism, if there's one issue that exposes those people who are truly American and those people who hate America, frankly, hate Jews, hate the rights of self-determination, it is on this issue of Zionism. Kennedy is a freaking Zionist. Trump is a Zionist. Every presidential candidate running is a rabid Zionist. And I think it's about—
Don't forget the Speaker of the House, too, Johnson.
The Speaker of the House is a nut job, okay? He's a Christian Zionist. And what I'd like to do, Mike, in this conversation is to give the American people a real chance to put someone who's an anti-Zionist, because to me, anti-Zionist, articulating it with boldness and courage and taking a clear stand, distinguishing it from anti-Semitism, exposing that Zionism is racism that serves imperial interests, is really the thing that separates the men from the boys, the women from the girls, and is what's going to save the, be it the United States or save the Palestinian people. Because to me, Mike, this is an issue that has gone on, at least in my lifetime, for nearly 40 years. Now, I've been a ground activist, as you know, fighting for truth, freedom, health. You know, 1980s, when I first came to MIT, one of the most insane Zionists came to Boston, a guy by the name of Meir Kahana. At that time, Ariel Sharon had taken tanks into Gaza. I mean, this has been a recurring process that's gone on every 10 to 15 years. And every 10 to 15 years, activists come and they'll raise a slogan, ceasefire now, free Palestine, don't fund. You know, these very nice, quote unquote, liberal sounding positions, but they haven't gotten anywhere. And those in power know that they're not going to get anywhere. People protest. But the messaging, the core of what we actually bring to the public and educate public must be much more sharpened. And that sharpness must go into discussing what is Zionism, that Zionism is racism, that Zionism has nothing to do with Judaism. And in fact, Zionism, the Zionists collaborated with the Nazis during World War II to butcher Jews. And we need, I'd like to have a deep discussion, Mike.
Let's do that. But let me interject. I'm glad you're making the distinction between Judaism and Zionism. That's really critical for people to understand, because we're seeing a lot of young Jews in America who are completely opposed to Zionism, which, as you said, is a philosophy that is rooted in racial supremacy. I mean, that's its founding, and that's how it has been inflicted upon other people, especially since the Nakba, you know, 1948. But I got to say, you know, in my defense, Dr. Shiva, and please pardon my ignorance, yeah, but like many Americans, I had no idea about the history of Zionism until October 7th. I really had no idea.
Wow, man, I didn't know that. All right, I didn't know that.
It's not my wheelhouse. It's not something that I was focused on, you know? So I've learned a lot of things in the last few weeks that are frankly very shocking and disturbing. And I've also seen Netanyahu and others quote the Bible saying, God told us to go murder and slaughter these innocent women and children and to kill the babies of the Palestinians. And I'm freaking out.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I think you're par exemplar then, Mike, because you love this country, you love America, you come from hard work, you're an entrepreneur, and you in many ways represent the average ordinary American who believes in American values. So I think my hope is that this discussion will serve to deepen your education, but frankly, everyone listening. And to me, it's very, very personal, Mike, because when you look at what Zionism is, when you look at what Brahmanism is, a caste system in India, when you compare it to what Christian Zionism is, in fact, Nazism, all these political ideologies, they have typically done something very powerful. They take the concept of people wanting their own nationalism, right, their own sense of identity. They throw in a little bit of religion, but it's wrapped in a political ideology. And the purpose of that political ideology is to separate people from other people, but not in the interests of what I call national self-determination, a righteous progressive nationalism, but actually to peel away people, ultimately to profit. So I want to walk through that, Mike, if that's okay.
Please go ahead.
Yeah. So I want to connect it on a personal level, Mike. People may know, you know, first of all, I'm running for president of the United States. And to me, this decision has been a part of a long journey that started for me, Mike, back in India. You know, I grew up in India. In 1963. I came to the United States in 1970. Now, what's important to understand there is that India has something called the Brahmanical caste system. Call it Brahmanism, Mike. And Brahmanism's view is that a small set of people are better than the rest of other people. So they took a little piece of Hinduism and the concepts of karma, and they contorted it to create this cultural nationalist view that a small set of people are better than others. And this is what they called, you know, Hinduism. But it isn't Hinduism. It's actually Brahmanism, where the caste system basically says that, you know, if you're born into this family birth lottery, you're a Brahmin, and therefore you're better than everyone else at a very systemic level. And this was your karma, Mike. They took the concepts of karma, which was really about action and reaction, which was right action leads to right results. And they contorted that to make it the view about one set of people are better than others. Does that make sense, Mike? So that was a caste.
Yes, and then that permeated all of society. So that special group of people ruled over other people and treated those other people like subhumans this day.
To this day. So when I was born, right, the idea was that I remember going to, after I finished playing soccer, to one of my friend's home, and the mother spit at me, called me an equivalent of the N-word, right, and said I couldn't come in and gave me water in a different cup. And that's when I realized what the... you know, what's going on here? And I asked my mom, and she said, oh, when I used to go to the well to get water, they'd shoo me away like a pig. We're this caste. And this is a 4 years old, Mike. So this was quite, and I can still remember that day. So I was quite very, very upset. The sadness in me still comes now, but more interested in understanding why this occurred. Where did this injustice occur? And that really is what got me into politics, Mike. I studied everything I could starting at that age, believe it or not. India in those days used to have these little comic books, and the comic books were about political history. It's fascinating. And so I wanted to understand the system, and that journey that began 55 years ago, and I'm 59 now, to today, has been a journey to understand the systems of oppression, the Indian caste system. So when we came to the United States in 1970, Mike, you know, my parents were hard working class people. We first settled in Paterson, New Jersey, one of the poorest predominantly African-American cities in the United States, went to public school. And my parents, whatever money they earned, Mike, they would move to these better public school systems. So we went to, obviously there were all white people, I mean, all black people in Paterson. Then we went to Clifton, mixed working class neighborhood, Persephone, mixed working class neighborhood. But we also, I was in, you know, my sixth grade teacher was a gentleman by the name of Mr. Roth. He had been in the Navy, he was Jewish, but he was a working class Jew. You know, he was on one of the ships that from the distance he saw the bomb drop on Hiroshima. But this guy was a strong working class Jew. He was my sixth grade teacher. I learned so much from him. In the last 2-3 years of high school, Mike, my parents wanted us to even get a better education. So we moved to a town called Livingston, New Jersey. People should look it up. In fact, Ivanka and Jared Trump moved there. And I felt very much out of place here, Mike. I was the only dark-skinned Indian kid among 4,000 predominantly Jewish kids. And in the air, and these were very wealthy kids, very different than Persephone, where, you know, the previous town. And you can see a big distinction between the working-class Jews in Persephone and these bourgeois Jews. And their parents, Mike, around, I think, sophomore year, would send them to Israel. And they would come back, Mike, wanting to freaking kill every Arab, completely culturally trained in Zionism.
Wow.
And so I was exposed to this because I was one of the best students, a good, in fact, a very good sportsman. And there were many, many instances, Mike, where I was discriminated because only Jewish people are the chosen people of God. Wow, how is this Indian kid doing better than everyone? And I could get into the levels of discrimination that I endured. But the bottom line is I came to understand what Zionism is. This is, you know, when I'm 16, 17, 18. So everyone needs to understand that Zionism is anti-Semitism. So if you are anti-Zionist and someone calls you an anti-Semite, I'm going to give you the actual historical tools to understand why this is complete nonsense. Zionism is racism that serves imperial interests, power, profit, and control. So let's sort of peel this back, Mike, because I've been studying this for a while. So what is Zionism? Well, believe it or not, there's 70 million Christian Zionists in the United States, Christians, actually. You know, if you look at the Bible Belt, about 80% of them are Christian Zionists. Christian Zionist comes from this eschatological view of Christianity, which actually goes back around 1600s, Mike. Prior to the 1600s, when you really look at the teachings, even from the time of Martin Luther, the idea, and I'm not saying I support any of these ideas, but I'm just sort of presenting it, everyone should do their own research, was that a Jewish person had to convert to Christianity and then, you know, they would have salvation. Between 1600s and 1800s, a form of Christian Zionism appears, which says, oh, if the Jews go back to their homeland, right? They still have to convert, and then they establish themselves in their homeland, then they can reach salvation. By the 1800s, I believe the guy's name is Wilhelm Heckler, this became this concept. All Jews had to do was go back to Jerusalem, set themselves up, and they would reach salvation. Now, this was a Christian Zionist view. It did not exist before. So you have Heckler over here, and it was just sort of fate, you could say, connects with a guy called Theodor Herzl. Now, who's Theodor Herzl? One of the contextual things we need to understand is in Europe, there was a very interesting phenomenon going on, right? Europe had different religions and different races of people. You know, we were, at that time, Europe was living in the world of feudalism, right? Kings and lords. Now, it so turns out that bourgeois Jews, very wealthy Jews, were the ones who advised the kings on finance and usury, and they were the bankers. This is not to say there was not a broad mass of working class Jews. And there was discrimination. There was pogroms that would take place against a broad mass by the Cossacks, quote unquote Cossacks, of these broad mass of Jews. Now, one way to think about this, Mike, is if you're living among the elites, and let's say the subjects that you have are people of all different races and all different religions, the elites always want to make sure those people of these different backgrounds do not rise up against them. Very sure. Similar to when the when the first white colonists came here, there were the wealthy colonists. They had a policy, and this has been written about quite extensively, that the poor white colonists were made afraid of the black slaves, who were made afraid of the Native Americans, because they didn't want all of these people ganging up on them. Okay, Mike? So they bred fear among white colonists to fear the blacks and fear the Native Americans, et cetera. So this is what I call a form of cultural nationalism that is bred so you keep people spread apart. In India, for example, it is very easy to start a race war or a religious war. A Hindu politician, if he wants to get elected, will go among Hindus and say, see, the Muslims hate you, and you can rile people up, same way with the Muslim politician. So the concept of keeping people, everyday people, divided by race and religion has been an extraordinary, powerful way for those in power to stay in power. So in Europe, getting back to Europe, there was the question, you know, the Jews that we're talking about were in Europe. They were white. They weren't, you know, dark-skinned Arab Jews. We're talking about white European Jews who've been there for 300 years. And when they were feeling discrimination, there was two trends, Mike. One trend were working-class Jews, fighters who were part of trade unions and working-class movements. They said, no, we're Europeans, we're Jews, we're going to fight for our rights. All right? We have the right to be here, our rights to national self-determination here. The other more reactionary trend was this emerging Zionist movement. In fact, it was called Zionism by Theodor Herzl. And so Herzl's view was, well, we should go to a homeland. And his meeting with Heckler gave him this ideological references, these sort of Christian religious references, Mike, very much like how Brahmanism took religious references from Hinduism and justified why you can support a type of cultural nationalism. So fundamentally, Herzl's meeting with Heckler and so on resulted, they attempted to work with the Germans to get the right to a homeland. Eventually, the British gave them the right to a homeland. But we have to understand that there were many Zionist conferences held, the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. The sixth Zionist conference, one of the decisions was made to have the homeland be in Uganda, Mike. Okay. Really? Yes, Argentina was another choice. And finally, the Balfour Declaration gets signed, and the Zionist movement is given a place in Palestine, which was Palestinians were living. 97% were, in fact, Arabs. So this is very important to understand.
Right, but how can they be given a place when the givers didn't own it?
Exactly. Great question. Great question. Yeah. So we should put giving in double quotes. So what happened here was Britain, as everyone needs to understand, Imperial Britain, colonial Britain, always prospered by dividing and ruling people. Divide and rule, Mike. So when they went across Africa, right? I mean, you had these African kings had very, they had their borders very clearly out. And Britain came and drew random lines called nation states. And it had these people fighting against each other. And as they fought against each other, Britain on the back end used those divisions to seize control of diamonds, right? All sorts of resources. That was a goal here. Just one point I want to make sure is that people understand when I call this racism, Zionism is built on a political ideology of the chosen people, that they have the right to go be occupiers of other people's land. Remember, Nazism was a political ideology that it said they are a superior race, so they have the right to go occupy other people's land. Unfortunately, Christian Zionism, the concept of manifest destiny, had this same concept, right? That we are going to help the heathens. And this is a very powerful philosophy because using this notion of you are better, that you have a manifest destiny, it justifies butchering of, let's say, the Aborigines in Australia, butchering of the Native Americans, same in Canada. And it's very interesting, Canada, the United States, and Australia, I'm talking about the elites there, all support Zionism. It comes down to this core ideology of cultural nationalism. It well, is also...
Let me interject. This all makes sense so far, but let me interject. One of the things that's been really shocking for me to observe over the last few weeks is many, many top officials of Israel actually demonstrating their support for genocide and ethnic cleansing. For example, the former ambassador to Italy talking about how they need to completely wipe out Gaza. Netanyahu himself, Gallant, the leader of the IDF. I mean, they're not hiding behind euphemisms. They are directly saying that we are the chosen people and that we have to go wipe out the Amalek, I think was the term that Netanyahu used. We have to wipe out these other people, and that's the only way that we can survive as a people. Now, it seems like, from my point of view, again, I have not been aware of all this for much time, but from my point of view, I can't ever recall the Israeli leaders speaking out in such a way in direct support of genocidal actions and calling for the mass slaughter of innocent civilians. It seems like, am I wrong? Did I just not notice before?
Yeah. Or so I think it's important to understand, if you go look at Menachem Begin, if you go look at Ariel Sharon, all of these people have used these kinds of genocidal words. I mean, as far as I remember, from in 1980, when you had Gaza steamrolled over, you can go look at the 2000s, it's been a constant policy. What has occurred, Mike, is Israel has a parliamentary system of coalitions. So the quote unquote, when the rabid right comes in, you'll hear more of this. When the liberals take over, they still have this as the underpinnings, right? But at the core of it, this has been something that's been recurrent. And that's what I want to mention to people. A lot of the new generation of people, you know, by the way, young people under the age of 30 and 40 people under the age of 44, 65% of those people do not want us to send weapons to Israel, Mike. This just came out in a CBS poll. You won't see that discussed on the mainstream media. The key thing to understand is that Zionism, Theodor Herzl, was built on racism. His best financiers, one of his best financiers was Cecil Rhodes, Rhodesia, Mike. So that's where he got his money to build Zionism. As we know, Rhodesia was built on the back of this philosophy that the white man was better than the black man, period, okay? So this notion of one race being better than the other is one that fueled Zionism, funded it. And what you're seeing today, the words, I mean, I have a bunch of quotes I put up on my Twitter site. I mean, you have the president of Israel basically saying, you know, all of these civilians are our enemies and we are here to basically destroy all of them. So the term genocide, the policies of genocide go hand in hand with cultural nationalism, Mike, because one race is better than the other. And this, unfortunately, was true what drove Christian Zionism when it came to the United States. So when you look at the United States today, what has happened in the United States, Mike, is the Zionism has essentially hijacked even at the working class level. So Christian Zionism, you have these, quote unquote, I want to put double quotes around Christian Zionists, who have taken this eschatological view. It's a big term that means the view Armageddon is going to come one day, and we have to make sure the Jews head back to Jerusalem, and when the homeland is set up, then Christ is going to descend and we're all going to be free. This is this quote unquote Christian Zionist view. There's 70 million, Christian Zionists in the United States. So think about that. There's only 14 million Jews. So there's far more Christian Zionists than there are Jewish Zionists. In fact, there are many Jews who are anti-Zionists, and this needs to be understood. So to everyone listening, we cannot allow these genocidal maniacs when you expose Zionism to say you're anti-Semitism. So Zionism is actually anti-Semitism. In the Warsaw Ghetto fights of World War II, where Jews were starting to arm themselves to fight in these very concentration camp-like ghettos against Nazis, it was the Zionists, Mike, who collaborated with Israel to disarm the Jews, Mike. This is something that everyone needs to understand. Zionism collaborated with Nazism, very much like many of the black cultural nationalists in the 1800s would collaborate with the KKK, because they had this view of separatism. We're going to go back to Africa, Marcus Garvey. So the concept of one cultural nationalist group collaborating with another on the basis of racism was always a twin pair. So Zionism collaborated with Nazism against Jews. So this is something we need to educate people on. So
yes, Zionism is
anti-Semitism. And in the United States, Mike, what's now happened is every politician, you can go look at AIPAC's list. I mean, it's more than three quarters of the House of Representatives and Senate has to bow down to Israel, Mike.
They do.
Has to bow down to Zionism.
They do.
To get elected.
Don't they actually sign pledges to Israel?
To sign a pledge. And that's why if you look at every candidate, every one of them, Democrat and Republican, Booby f***ing Kennedy, excuse my language, but or Donald freaking Trump or Vivek the Snake, all of these people are all Zionists, because Zionism means that you believe that it's right for an occupying force, the chosen people, to establish their quote unquote homeland and to butcher Palestinians. Go look at Booby Kennedy's tweet feed. Go look at Trump's tweet feed. Go look at Nikki Haley's tweet feed. Go look at DeSantis's tweet feed. Vivek the Snake is just a slime job, because one day he says this and another day he says that. But fundamentally, these people have no backbone to stand up against Zionism. Because if you
had... it's clear that, I mean, just to back up some of what you're saying there, it's clear that Donald Trump is all in with Israel. Anything, I mean, he said it explicitly. Anything Israel needs, he would provide as president. I guess that means endless weapons, endless funding. But, you know, this seems a lot like a racket to me, where America gives billions of dollars to Israel. Then some of that money finds its way into groups like AIPAC that then threaten members of Congress and senators, threaten, oh, you know, we're going to primary you if you don't support Israel. So wait a minute, you're using our own money to threaten our so-called representatives to do your bidding in Israel. Now, we can send two carrier strike groups to the Eastern Mediterranean Sea. We can't put troops on the southern border of the United States and defend our own borders. But Johnson, the new speaker of the GOP, he's like, anything for Israel, freaking nothing for America. That's the message that I'm getting from the GOP right now.
Yeah, Mike, I think this is a very good transition to talk about from a systems analysis, how Zionists have hijacked America, Wall Street, Hollywood, academia. And that's what we're talking about. Ultimately, the victims of this are two peoples right now, the Palestinian people and the American people. And I want to intersect this. The Zionists who do not care about our borders will send, as you said, two aircraft carriers to protect Zionists. I really like to, I don't know why they're calling it the Israel Hamas war. By the way, everyone also needs to know, Mike, Hamas was created by Israel.
We do know that, yes.
Hamas was created by Israel in 2019. You know, Yossi Cohen, who's the head of Mossad, who's been tagged to become the next prime minister of Israel by Netanyahu, was in Qatar telling them keep funding Hamas. Because, see, there were actually secular, it's very, very important to understand this nuance. Among the Palestinian people, there were secular, which means non-religious liberation organizations fighting for the people of Palestine. So it is very important that Zionism created a radical Islamic thing to make this secular struggle look crazy. So they funded Hamas to be the crazy wing, to, and in fact, wanted them to be the leadership wing so they could say, see, these people are nuts. So the secular wing of the Arab movement was diminished. And this is openly talked about. Netanyahu talks about, you can find all the videos. Yossi Cohen was in Qatar. And this is, this is out there. But none of the mainstream media wants to say, well, how do these people on these gliders come over into Israel when Israel supposedly has the most amazing security system where every microsecond they're using satellites, you know, the most advanced AI system to surveil this? If you go look at the December 2012 issue of The Economist, Mike, and I don't know if The Economist, by the way, one of the Rothschilds used to run and own The Economist. But in the 2012 issue, it has this wild war going on in Israel, and you see Hamas on a hang glider, Mike, and Netanyahu on a hang glider fighting over Israel. I don't know if you've seen this image.
No, it's I haven't seen it.
Yeah, so it's almost they're foreshadowing what's going to be coming. But it needs to be understood that Zionism, Indian Brahminism, loves when they have the radical element. Indian Brahminism loves when some crazy radical Muslim guy does something in India. Now they can bring all their forces, say, see, all the Muslims are like this. Zionism is the one that supported Hamas. So when I see Hamas is doing this, replace Hamas with Israel, okay? Because if Hamas truly cared about the Palestinian people, their liberation, it would have armed all of them, Mike. You would have had popular militias. They haven't done that. They've kept it as a standing army because it can be controlled. So, but I think we need to recognize, to your point, what has been occurring with U.S. policy. U.S. policy since 1948 to today was hijacked. And that hijacking was to support Israel. Now, what is Israel? Israel fundamentally is a military base that serves imperial interests, British interests, and now U.S. interests. So it must be understood that the British colonialism, British imperialism, U.S. imperialism, when they saw that strip of land, Mike, in Palestine, they were eyeing that for a long time, long before even Herzl came around, long before Zionism existed. They wanted that land, Mike, because it is a, just go look at where Palestine is, right?
Right.
In between the trade, the Middle East, it's a strategic piece of property.
Clearly.
So when this Zionist movement came, they saw this as a huge opportunity to bring the Zionists over to Palestine. They knew it was going to create this problem, Mike, but that's what they wanted. Britain always wants national divisions. They go carve up countries. They did it in India. They did it in Africa. And that's what they did in that region. They knew it was going to cause a problem. British imperialism loves problems because whenever there's nation state wars, they can come in. They can try to be like they're the peacemakers, but ultimately control that situation. So the entire area of Palestine was targeted by imperialism for profiteering interests. So it just so happened these Zionists served that purpose, Mike. And Zionism doesn't give a damn about Jews. It's absolutely fine, funding Hamas to create this war. And if we go look at Zionism, the United States, Zionism controls a financial system. Zionism controls Hollywood. Zionism controls academia. And why do I call it Zionism versus Judaism? Because in all these sectors, if you say anything against Israel, you're gone. Look at all the, I think, close to 600 A-list actors have signed this pledge, basically saying that, we should not stop this war until we get the hostages, okay? Basically supporting the butchering of Palestinians. And if you look at all those actors who've signed that, Mike, they're all what you call the A-list. The B or C-list have signed the other pledge, okay? Because in order to be an A-list actor, you're not going to get there without paying homage to Israel. And every, 3 to 4 years, you'll see a movie coming out in Hollywood always talking about the abuse that took place to the Israelis, but never talking about the Palestinian conditions. I think there was one movie done in 1984 with Diane Keaton, and everyone should watch it, called The Little Drummer Girl. And it exposes how Mossad is the security unit of Israel, operates. And how they actually, Mossad's slogan, Mike, is through deception, thou shalt win war. Let me repeat that again. Through deception, thou shalt win war. That is the entire basis of Israel's approach on how they, quote unquote, win wars or execute massacres.
Well, and to that point, by the way, these leaked documents that came out from Israel's Ministry of Intelligence that have been confirmed you know, show that this was a plan to push all 2.3 million Palestinians out of Gaza, push them to the Sinai Peninsula, push them over to Egypt, right? And then to claim Gaza for Israel, just to make it part of greater Israel, you know, stealing more land, which has been the pattern since 1948 and 1967, and 1973, and so on. It's just, oh, always ending up with more and more land and displacing people. But in order to, how do you encourage 2.3 million people to leave their homes? You have to bomb them. You have to murder them. And then you claim, oh, let's leave a humanitarian corridor open so they can leave. Well, they're never going to get to come back if Israel achieves this plan. But also, in order to start all of this, Israel had to allow Hamas to attack it on October 7th, the stand down order. Do you agree with that assessment that they stood down on purpose to allow this attack?
Yeah, Mike. And I think this is the, you know, Mossad again, who's the one that helped fund and fuel Hamas. Their slogan is "Through deception, thou shalt win war." And, you know, the first tweet I did on this, Mike, was the following, is that Netanyahu, who's, you know, the more apparent butcherer of Palestinians, the liberal Zionists do the same thing, but they just act nice as they stab the Palestinians in the back. But Netanyahu is open about this. Now, Netanyahu, Mike, for the last 2 years, has been under, he was criminally indicted. There's been massive fraud charges against him for corruption and fraud. The broad mass of Israelis hate Netanyahu.
That's right.
There were massive protests in Israel just 2 weeks before October 7th. 100,000 people came to protest against him. He is not liked. And if you remember in history, whenever a king or a leader, when people start rising up against that leader, what's the first thing they do? They point the enemy somewhere else to galvanize their people. Oh, we have an enemy outside.
Right.
So Netanyahu was on his way out, Mike. So you have that dynamic going on within Israel. In the United States, you have this other dynamic that the financial system is actually should have collapsed, Mike. And I want to talk about this.
Please.
The financial system of the United States was about to collapse. So the United States needed a war distraction, another crisis, so they could use that crisis to justify printing money. So let me sort of intersect both of these. So first thing people need to understand, just go do a little bit of Googling, go look at prior to October 7th, and you'll see that Netanyahu was under massive protests to get rid of him. And starting in April, he attacked the Aqsa, mosque twice, Mike. He wanted to, and it's one of the most holiest shrines of Muslims. He wanted to incite something. Now, if you look at broadly, Mike, and we just want to step back a little bit, if we go to the fact that the United States economy has been abusing the American working people at all levels. It doesn't care about protecting borders. It doesn't care about really creating a vibrant economic system. It's been fueled by printing money. Let's go back to the presidency of Barack Obama. Barack Obama, a lot of working class whites, a lot of black people voted for Obama. In fact, 57% of Trumpers voted for Obama. He was a Manchurian candidate that was, again, supported and created by Zionists. The Pritzker family in Chicago was his big funder. Overnight, this guy shows up. So Zionist-fueled Obama's job, as he was presented to the public, was he was going to help the masses of working people. But what did he do, Mike? In 2008, all the big Zionist, the Zionist financial system, the banking system in the United States, was creating all these derivative products, making tons of money, selling wacko, you know, banking products.
Credit default swaps and all that, yeah.
All that stuff, right? It was all crazy stuff that would never have been allowed. But because the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, the Congress, and the bankers all have a revolving door of, frankly, Zionists. We have to go look at this. We have to address that. So they supported all this completely crazy financial products, which manipulated working people. People invested in these products, and everything crashed in 2008. Now, if you were a true market capitalist, a true American, you would have let all those big banks fail. They should have failed, Mike.
That's right.
But we didn't. What happened is the Fed, people need to understand the Congress, the United States Congress, did something quite unfortunate. They allowed the Treasury to outsource their printing of money to something called the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is a private organization. And the Federal Reserve basically prints money at will and gives it to their friends in the banking community, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, et cetera, who then funnel it to BlackRock. And all of these people work with each other. They collect commissions on all of this money printing. So when 2008 occurred, if Obama truly cared about people, he would have let all these banks fail, but he didn't. In the midnight hour, the Fed prints money. They print, in Obama's term, they printed $8.1 trillion, Mike. So this money was printed, and they came up with a big name for it, Mike. They called it quantitative easing. Remember that term?
Yes.
Right? All it meant was we're going to print money for our banker friends, and we're going to save them. And all that money went to banks who fueled it into the stock market. And that's what they did. So between 2008 and around 2016, 20, what occurred is that the economies, the interest rates, if you remember, Mike, were very, very low.
Yes.
And one of the things people need to understand is if you want to take one thing on from this discussion relative to the economy, write down the word money supply. Money supply is like water coming out of a spigot, okay? He who controls the money supply controls economies. So they had put all this money out there, more money, right? More supply of money, just like you have more water, the price of money went down. So interest rates, they drove down, Mike. So during that period, remember 2008-16, the interest rates were very, very low, Mike. Who did that help? It really helped people like Jared Kushner. It helped people like Trump. It helped all these people who were real estate, quote unquote, magnates, because they could use that low interest rate to buy other buildings, right? And be bigger slumlords. That's what it did. So the interest rates in the United States were kept artificially low by the Zionist cabal to serve Zionists. And they could print money at will to support wars. So the money supply is controlled by a finite set of people who printed it to save their own skin, not to really fuel a real economy. Well, by 2017, 18, 19, if you remember, Mike, small businesses like, you know, entrepreneurs was becoming quite vibrant. The economy was growing again and interest rates were edging up, because when entrepreneurs grow, we're going to demand more money for loans to grow our businesses. And the interest rates were easing up, starting to go up. And this would have been a threat to the cabal. And this is why Trump was brought in, Mike. They needed to bring down keep those interest rates low. So
yeah, Trump argued for negative interest rates even.
Well, Trump said a lot of stuff. He also said he was going to lock up Hillary. He also said he was going to drain the swamp. He said a lot of things. But ultimately what Trump did and supported was this fictitious thing called a pandemic. The pandemic was created, if you follow the money, as a vehicle to hide this another economic collapse that was going to take place. They needed to print more money, Mike.
Yep. And it became stimulus money. Yep.
Right. What did the pandemic do? It ultimately shut down all these small businesses, Costco's, Amazon, Walmart's. They were all, they're the 600 billionaires made $2.3 trillion of the $8 trillion Trump printed in one term. So in one term, $8 trillion get printed. And you remember that the market was going down and then it comes back up. So the pandemic was a way that they created a fake crisis to help the banking class. That's what occurred.
And to keep the zombie economy looking like it's still alive.
Exactly.
But now that zombie economy is approaching its end game again, so they need another crisis.
Exactly. If you look at all the indicators, Mike, many, many indicators, there should have been a crash in October, Mike. They knew this is coming. So the United States financial system is running on fumes. We don't really produce anything. We don't really innovate. I'm sorry, Elon Musk is not innovating anything great. He's a front man for government, and we can have a longer discussion on that. But fundamentally, the U.S. economy is not vibrant. It's based on printing of money. Now that, you know, money gets printed and it sort of goes out in the economy. So they needed another crisis, Mike. So they tried Ukraine, Mike. It didn't work too well, okay?
Right.
Then the goal was, remember, less than 2 months ago, they were discussing, ooh, there could be another variant of COVID. Americans fought back against that.
Right.
So what better way than to create this new crisis in the Middle East? So it was a meeting of the Zionists in the United States who are very close with Netanyahu, you know, very close. And we should discuss how close they are. Anthony Blinken is an Israeli citizen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so is half the CDC.
Half the CDC are Israeli citizens. So why is it that these people are allowed to hold public positions in public office? So these people are Zionists. They're able to have dual citizenship in the United States and Israel. And you find consistently their loyalty, I want to put it broadly, is to Zionism, is to Israel. It is not to the American working people. So in one of the videos that came out, this young kid is reading out the names of all the people in the CDC who supported the nonsensical policy which helped Big Pharma. Albert Bourla, another big Zionist, he was honored by Netanyahu in Israel as a Lifetime Achievement Award. Again, Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, was honored by Israel, which had a massive vaccination policy. They collected data on all their citizens to fuel further vaccine research. But Albert Bourla is a Zionist. He's out of Israel. And we need to understand that Pfizer's revenue, Mike, if you look from 2012 to 2019, was going down like this. It was going from $65 billion in revenue down to $40 billion. Pfizer was headed on its way out of business. They needed the vaccine, okay? And everyone should also, we should do some investigation on the trips that Jared Kushner made to Israel and UAE, met with Albert Bourla. What was all that about? But the vaccine ultimately helped the Big Pharma guys. And I talked about this back in 2020. We talked about it, our movement talked about this in 2020, Mike. We came out against lockdowns. Kennedy was pro-lockdowns. Trump was pro-lockdowns. Fauci was pro-lockdowns. So all of these same people who support Zionism were supporting lockdowns. They supported killing millions of people. So when we intersect all of this, Mike, what you find is that we're seeing the overt butchering of the Palestinian people, the genocide. But we must intersect that as Americans with the fact that since 1980, with the policies that started with John Kennedy, with the 1962 Vaccination Act, which allowed government, you know, all these bureaucracies, a creation of multiple departments within the CDC, so the government had a right to jab you. That began under John Kennedy, 1962 Kennedy Vaccination Act. And since that point to today, you can see the American lifespan. Your children, these policies of the left and the right, the Kennedys, are frankly killing American children. And I don't say this dramatically. People go to our website. There's a wonderful graph you'll find in the download section. It's a graph from 1980, the lifespan going like this, Mike. It's an upside down umbrella. And so if you have a child today, your child will have a shorter lifespan than you. So that is one of the key performance indicators of all of this is working. So fundamentally, the US system, the financial system, the medical system, all of these systems have failed America. So we're actually killing children. And I say that because your child today will have a shorter lifespan than you. I'm the only one, Mike, talking about this. Now you intersect that, the same people who are fine with the last 40, 50 years of passing policies to kill American children, why would they care to go? They have no remorse for going and killing Palestinian children, Mike. That's right. What the fundamental issue is. Of the 8,000 people who've died, at least 50% are women and children. So we have to go back into the root cause of this. The root cause is this financial system, the swarm, as I call it, a multiracial aristocracy of people globally who don't care about working people. But the
let me bring in something real quick here. As of today, the time we're recording this, the number of Palestinian civilians who have been killed in IDF bombings of Gaza is at least 8,500. And I believe it's 60% that are women and children that are known. In addition, I mean, just the raw numbers are almost triple the casualties of 9/11 in America. But if you run the calculations per capita versus the population of Gaza, in other words, 8,500 deaths versus 2.3 million people, and you compare that to the per capita deaths of 9/11, Gaza has endured over 300 9/11s per capita.
And that's just in this event, Mike.
And it's not done. Yeah, the bombings are still happening.
We're not talking about since 1948.
No. We're talking about just since October 7th.
Exactly.
Right. So for people, this is what stuns me, that you have Christian Zionists in America that say, I'm opposed to abortion, that all babies should have the opportunity to live. I want to protect life. And then you're like, well, what about Gaza? Oh, bomb the children there. Bomb those kids. So wait a minute. You're not actually opposed to abortion. You're in favor of abortion via bombs, just not abortion via forceps or whatever, Planned Parenthood. See, I mean, the inconsistencies of all of this is what is driving me bonkers, because Dr. Shiva, I'm a principled person. And although I'm not perfect, I stick to principles as best I can. When someone says they're pro-life, I take them at their word. I think they mean, oh, you support all human life. And the answer is usually, no, they don't. They want to murder these people. But
yeah, Mike, it's quite, so this is what cultural nationalism leads to, Mike. Cultural nationalism always leads to this fanaticism and these serious inconsistencies. It becomes, quote unquote, religious, Mike. It's not based on any type of spirituality. I mean, the quotes that I put up on my Twitter feed was, to your point, and to all the Christian Zionists listening, you have to ask yourself, and I hope you guys go pray in quiet and connect with Christ and ask yourself if this is what you want to support. This is a president of Israel saying, quote, it is an entire nation who are responsible. This rhetoric about civilians not being involved is absolutely untrue. We will fight until we break their backs. And this is a woman, Maya Golan, who's the Israeli Minister of Women's Affairs. She said, I want to tell the world that they have long known about me in Israel. Quote, I don't care about Gaza. I literally don't care about Gaza. They can go swimming in the sea. And this is right from the chief Israeli spokesman. He goes, we are dropping hundreds of tons, not pounds, tons. One ton is 2,000 pounds. Hundreds of tons of bombs on Gaza, which means hundreds of thousands of pounds of bombs on Gaza. The focus is on destruction, not accuracy.
Yes.
So to your point, Mike, what happens is Christian Zionism, that's why I put double quotes Christian. In my view, you know, I've been a follower of Christ most of my life, and I have a deep personal relationship. And I don't want to get into it, but I don't believe these people are Christians, man. This is not Christianity. This is about using certain precepts, taking, you know, cherry picking, wrapping it into this eschatological view of Armageddon, and then manipulating. And this is 70 million working people in the United States have become Christian Zionists, Mike. This is who Mike Johnson comes out of.
Yes.
The current Speaker of the House, the second in line to be president. Zionism has literally hijacked America. And that Zionism basically leads to not a true self-determination for the American people, the interests of the working people of America, but some crazy batshit stuff condoning.
Exactly. To your point, when I hear these people talk and, you know, an eschatological point of view, I think the accurate description is actually a scatological point of view.
Yes. It's very close to that.
Sorry to interrupt, but this interview with Dr. Shiva went on for almost 2 hours, so I've divided it into two parts. Part two will be published separately. This is the conclusion of part one, and if you thought part one was controversial, wait until you hear part two. So thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech platform. As you can tell, we practice what we preach, and you just heard a lot of free speech. Thank you for watching today. Feel free to share this everywhere you'd like, and be sure that you don't miss part two on Brighteon.com with Dr. Shiva. All right, today's interview is brought to you by the nutritional solutions we have at healthrangerstore.com, which, you know, our slogan is healing the world with clean food. And so we do lab testing, and we do our own manufacturing and our own fulfillment, and we seek to provide outstanding nutrition and clean food, superfoods, nutritional supplements, and so much more to people all over the world, people of every religion, of every race, of every color, every country of origin, every gender, you name it. We believe that every human being has the right to be healthy. And so that's what we help people do. Now, we have vitamin C that's non-GMO, which is very rare. Let me show you on my desk here a little bit of what we have. We have buffered vitamin C powder, which is the vitamin C. That's sodium ascorbate in the larger containers there. And then we also have vitamin C capsules, which are, of course, also non-GMO, laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate, as well as microbiology. And then on our website, healthrangerstore.com, we have a lot of other forms of vitamin C here, as well as liposomal vitamin C in a liquid form. So if you're looking for high-quality vitamin C that you know to be clean, that is laboratory tested, we run the mass spec testing. We have the log files for all of our products. I think we do more testing of food and supplements than any other organization, probably in the world, no doubt, than any organization in the United States, other than perhaps the FDA itself. But we do extensive testing. We now have 6 mass spec instruments in our laboratory. We're about to bring dioxide testing online. I'll show you a video of that when we get that going. But in the meantime, you can rest assured that we conduct the testing for E. coli, for salmonella, for yeast and mold, and also for aflatoxins for the nuts and seeds that we carry as well. So nobody does more extensive testing than we do. And almost everything we sell is certified organic. Not everything can be certified organic, such as, you know, salt, for example. But almost everything that can be certified organic is certified organic in our store. So help support us and also support your good health at the same time. Shop at healthrangerstore.com, and we thank you for your support.